Yeah, it's like listening to Show 'Em All Night back in the 70s. Welcome back. It is the, what number is it, 16? 16th edition of the Melnick and Murphy podcast from Western NDG, CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side.
And we have one big music fan and a part-time music promoter and five musicians, and we're probably the only people not at Elton John's farewell concert to Montreal tonight at the Bell Centre. We are recording this on Thursday, October the 4th, and that was from the classic Yellow Brick Road album, and it's for Brian Smith. We're going to talk a little bit about Brian tonight, who a lot of people are still only finding out that he had cancer and just passed away. And I want to introduce, before we talk to K-Man, I first got to know Brian through this gentleman here, who's also extremely well known on the Montreal music scene, Steve Creep. How you doing, Steve?
Good morning. It's my morning anyway.
From the Capones. The Capones were formed when?
I guess November 2nd, 1997. Yeah. Yeah, November 2nd, 1997.
How do you know the exact date?
Because you two were playing the same night. I guess it was the 360 tour that they were doing that year? And we were opening up for a band at a place called Equinox on Côte de Neige. And it was a band called the Nixons we were opening for. And we were still called Destitute Vogue that night. And I'd only done maybe two gigs with that name because I joined after the fact. And the promoter that kind of put us on the bill was like, you guys, it's a different band now. Like, you shouldn't keep that name. It doesn't make sense with you. It's a little more gangster. It's raw. It's more something, you know. It's something darker. You should change the name, you know, something like a gangster name, like the Capones. And we're like, that's a great name. Let's use that. So that's where we were christened that day. Yeah.
Do you remember seeing and watching the Capones?
I think it was at either Brew, Club One, or Club Zone.
I saw my genitals before you saw
everybody.
A lot of people.
Don't feel special. K-Man. There's a K-Man right there. That's a Kristen club from K-Man and the 45s. Welcome, by the way. And Josh is also here from K-Man and the 45s.
Hello.
How you doing? Welcome. And Alan Hodgson, of course, along with Tony Colgan, helps us out, is also here. I guess, why don't we go around and let me find out, let me discover how you guys first met Brian, how you knew of him initially.
So I think it was Brutopia, and he had the same sparkly cowboy hat that he had on in the cover of, when you guys were on the cover of The Hour, that was the mirror.
That's his signature hat.
Yeah. And I walked in, and then he got off stage, and he walked by me, and I was like, it's that guy, like larger than life, and you know,
the cartoon character come to
the
life.
Beard, and I think he had like a bedazzled gold or something. Anyways, and it was just it was you and Scotty and Brian, and yeah, killing it.
When I met Brian, he still had kind of like a semi, I want to say mullet, but he was pretty much bald on the top of his head, so it was more like no work in the front, all party in the back, and. And he didn't have much of a fashion sense. And maybe about a few months into the band, I guess between Scott and I, you know, we were kind of the two skinny, malnourished rock and rollers with the eyeliner kind of thing and the dyed hair. And Brian needed to find his look. And it just started, I guess he felt the need to overcompensate. And he really overshot. And he did a wonderful job. I mean, the red goatee and the jewelry. And you couldn't miss the guy.
Nope.
And it's when we were on the road, like, there was two types of girls. There was girls that liked Scott and I, and there was girls that liked Brian. There was never a girl was like a caught between, you know, Scott and Brian or me and Brian. It was always these two malnourished skinny guys are going to get a certain type, and Brian was going to get another one.
But, perfect. No squabbles. No squabbles.
K-Man?
Well, Brian and I were just talking about this last week. We were trying to figure out when it was that we met the first time. In our discussions, we were saying between 96 and 98. And it's when I first met you as well, Steve. My timeline actually of even last week is pretty vague, okay?
Yeah.
10 years of my life is vague. But we hit it off right away and always knew that we were going to do stuff together. And he ended up playing in Cayman 45s for like 10 or 11 years. We've toured many national tours, over 10 of them. And I know for a fact that we shared a bed 76 times last year. That's how rock and roll
is. You counted that?
Well, actually, Mike Nero, our accountant, did, because he has all the papers, right? he actually called me yesterday. I'm like, it was 76 times, right? You know, and you get really close to people when you spend that much time together.
So you spoke to him, again, this is October 4th today as we record this. You spoke to him yesterday.
We were with him on Tuesday night. It was just the boys together. And we had a great time for about an hour and talked a bit. And this is important for anybody that knows Brian and was, you know, thinking about him being in pain and stuff like this. I can honestly tell you that after an hour of talking, he just looked my way and closed his eyes and said, "I'm tired, brother." And I reached over, I gave him a kiss, and I knew that we're saying goodbye in this moment. And he was very at peace, and he was not in pain at that moment. He was extremely at peace.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that, you know, people are always asking me. I've had over 300 messages in the last 24 hours. And, but I just want people to know that he was very at peace.
If there's a silver lining in any, because I was there on Saturday and Monday, and I was supposed to go see him on Wednesday. I woke up at 4 p.m. because, you know, I'm a musician, and my phone was flooded, and he had passed at 2 o'clock, so I missed all that. But the last 2 days that I spent with him, the silver lining in cancer when you're deteriorating slowly is you have time at least to process the thought and make peace with everyone and with your own mental state and where you're going and all that stuff. You know, that's the good side of it. The bad side of it is it happens real slow. You know, I had a friend who died in a head-on car collision, and it's like, man, you know, boom, lights out, good night. And no closure to anything for anybody involved, him or anybody else. So that's a difficult way to go as well. But in Brian's case, for all his friends, I'd say that I'm happy I got to see him. It was tough seeing him in that state, but I would rather... I'm glad I got, because we had some important things to talk about before.
Absolutely.
It happened, you know, and we got it in. So
when was he diagnosed?
Well, we had a 4-day tour, and it was in April, and at that point we knew there was something seriously wrong. He was punching the stage in Quebec City, and of course he played the fucking show anyways. Am I allowed to swear in here? Sorry if I...
Fuck yeah.
And, so, yeah, he was punching the stage, and, of course, he played the shows anyway. And then after, we knew there was a problem, and Josh helped me out here, but not long after that, we knew cancer was in the story. But we didn't know what type of cancer at that point. They had a real hard time locating what it was. And then May came around, and he was very ill at this point already. It was going so fast, and we were playing at Pooza Festival outside, and... As Brian, we all know him. He doesn't give you many choices when he has his mind set on something. Called me up. We had already paid another drummer to stand on the sidelines and just be ready in case Brian was ill. And he calls me up at 11:30 at night, the night before, and goes, "Okay, man, you know I'm fucking playing the show tomorrow, right?" I said, "Of course you are," you know. And that's Brian that we all know, and you know his voice. And it wasn't even Scottish at that point. He was really serious, you know.
Real Brian.
Exactly.
There was a weird thing because, like, at first when he got into the hospital, it was in January. He had, like, a blood clot on his legs, and he got that for that. And the doctor, "All right, you're going to take blood thinner." And I don't know why, but blood thinner didn't go along very well with him. So at that point, I'm pretty sure he had this stomach hurt. Like, even when we were on tour, he was like, he was, "Oh, I can get coffee, I can get that, I can get That's that," right. Because like he was very sensitive. But as soon as he got his blood thinner, it seems like everything just fall apart. It's just like and I remember when we played for that 4 days tour with Muster Plug, Frankie was with Brian on the side of the stage, and Brian is, like, his belly hurt so much that he was crying It's like, I can do this. Like, he knew he had, like, there was something important, but, like, it was still doing it. And especially, like, in May when he was in Pusa, like, when I've seen him, like, 3 weeks ago, he was like, that was the last day I was in shape and control of myself. Yeah. Like, at Pusa, it was like his... He said, like, I should have enjoyed more of that day, but he already enjoyed it. It was, like, perfect. I mean, like, that guy is fueled by music, and that was his climax.
Yeah. Even when we were in the Capones in the late 90s, I remember there was one tour where he'd pulled a hamstring one time, and there was another time where he'd hurt his ankle. And both times were his bass drum leg, and he just muscled right through it. Like, he... Like, he's like, I'm going to do this, and that's that. I don't know if it was just, like, he didn't want a substitute coming in and owning his name, but, the guy just knew how to muscle through pain, you know?
So it was pancreatic cancer?
Yes.
That's a killer. It's so sad. All I mean, it's weird how it works, because I think the older you are, like, if you're into your 60s and 70s, you actually have a better chance of living.
That's what I heard, yeah.
A longer life. Ronnie Hawkins is, I don't know if he's 80 yet, but he was diagnosed in his late 60s with pancreatic cancer. Yeah, and he's still around.
Cell regeneration. Because when you're younger, your cells regenerate more, but they regenerate with cancerous cells.
Yeah.
And I think that's why. I'm not, K-Man yeah. don't know
and
shit.
And so Brian was what, 52?
He's exactly 50.
He's 50, yeah.
50?
Yeah, his birthday was October
17. How to explain... There are a lot of people who are music fans who don't even know who he was, but they met him, right? At Steve's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never mind Steve's. Like, let alone Steve's. He's dealing with every drummer in town, but he was a mainstay.
Wait a minute. He's dealing with every drummer in town. Shane Murphy has played with what, 29 drummers?
Something like that.
Did you miss Brian?
He was always busy.
Yeah. Sorry, brother.
He was always in other bands. Yeah. I never had a chance. Never had a chance.
He was dumb, and the drum guy was in Montreal was Brian.
You'd always see him cycling up the plateau on that like limousine of a bike that he had.
Yeah, a low rider.
He'd always be outside the bars. Like, I can't tell you how many gigs I did at, you know, McKibben's or Old Orchard on the plateau, and he'd come by. We'd do a shot, and we'd talk about old times really quick, and sometimes we wouldn't, but he would still do a shot with us, and... He was just always there. Like, everywhere you went, it's almost like he was a politician going around making the rounds, you know?
Yeah. That's so well said, though. Like, I was obviously thinking a lot about different things today. And, I mean, he has a wonderful family. He really does. Yeah. But he also made Montreal music scene his other family. And, I mean, nobody else embodied that as much as him. When you say there's every single drummer in Montreal knows him, I would put my hand in fire and say, yeah, you're absolutely right.
I
everybody.
Not even Montreal, too. Yeah. Like, everyone that's going up from outside of Montreal, if you're...
Because even before Steve's, he was at Etal Melody. So, like, he's been working in drum stores for a long time. So all these drummers go to him. And nobody knew their stuff better than Brian. Like, I started on drums, and I consider myself to be pretty knowledgeable. But Brian could look at a hi-hat stand and tell you what year they were made. Like, it's unbelievable.
So describe his drumming.
His drumming was one thing I loved about his drumming was that really appealed to what the Capones were about that a lot of other drummers didn't get was how hard he hit, and I love that because some drummers, especially in the pub scene, which is what I do now, they're very hesitant to hit hard, and that's the environment for that. I get it; you don't want to play loud, but to get a rock drummer to play simple and hard, the first thing that was a little difficult was getting Brian to tone it down because he comes from a prog background. And Scott really wanted simple drumming, and I really wanted simple drumming. But
Scotty
he really
Mitchell.
Got it. He really did. And he hit hard. He played fast, a little too fast at times, but it always kept us on our toes. You know, I mean, I love the Ramones, and they played way too fast, so I'm game.
Yeah, I don't think you can say that anymore, that they played way too fast.
No.
It worked.
It worked.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
It's their speed.
Hell yeah. It was better.
You're
was
just
better.
Doing it too Faster slow. That's it.
Well, so you were, K-Man, you were aware of the Capones?
Absolutely. That's we met back then at Club Zone. You were mentioning
you were
James.
You tripped me off, right?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah, for 12 years. Jesus Christ, I'm old.
Yeah, I think I met Brian in 94 or 95. I was in Pushing Up Daisies as a drummer, and we'd be splitting bills with Destitute Vogue, which was Brian's band with Scott. And then... Scott had something happen with Jason Hart, who was his bass player at the time, who also works at Steve's with Brian. And they've all stayed friends over the years. It's really amazing. I go to the store and I'm still friends with them. But I needed my band broke up just as this thing was going down with Jason, and that's how I became in the band. I was just drumming in their loft, and then Scott's like, "Well, why don't you try play bass with us?" Because he saw I noodle on guitars. I've known Scott for a long time, and that's how that came to be. But it's funny how small the community is, you know, and then you end up in the same boat as each other.
So I want to tell a couple of Capone stories, but I want to hear some music first, because post Capone's, mm-hmm. I didn't really get to see Brian play much music, and every time I did run into him, he would always mention you guys.
We were always on the road, man. Like in the scene, at least Canadian touring in the last 5 years, there's not many bands that toured more than we did. Like, we wanted to be on the road. That's where we felt comfortable, you know? So we weren't even in Montreal all the time. And, like, I know in, like, the last 4 years, I think we did 10 national tours. It was absolutely insane, the rate that we were going at. I mean, you were asking what type of drummer he was. You're totally right, all right, Steve, that, yes,
but he grew up a lot musically.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, as time went. Yeah. I think that was playing with you guys, playing in the pub scene with mm-hmm. various musicians, working in a music store, and just he was a sponge.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. And he would never just shut things out. Like, mm-hmm. some musicians, you meet them and they have tunnel vision, but Brian was always just like looking for what was good in something.
Yeah.
And that was his overall look in life, yeah. if you ask
On
me.
On our last album, his drumming is so diverse. It's right. incredible.
Right.
Like, really, everything from cross-stick stuff to really heavy stuff to...
Oh, when I found out he was playing in a ska band, I was like, who's this guy? You
know? I mean, yeah. he made it pretty... Like, our ska is pretty damn rock and roll, I gotta say, you know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, he was the perfect fit. And if it wasn't for Brian, he helped me grow as a musician. I mean, I can't stress that enough, what he brought to the band... And bringing backgrounds and knowing ideas. Like, okay, we're, like, I remember the first time we had supper as we were starting the band, and he's like, okay, we're playing ska, but, like, if the Clash played ska, and then we'll put horns on it. And that's where we went.
You know? Hybrid.
Okay, so take us right into one of your best songs here.
This is I Don't Mind, Brian singing backup while playing drums.
Flower child, I sit around, I'm getting drunk, and 3 days later smell like punk. You spin around looking for that long lost radio. I got a beer, got some wine, got some herb, and now I light it up, light it up, light it up, light it up. Oh, we get it crazy, baby. Free hugs on the street, the perfect place to stomp the beat. Bringing bottles back by noon, another party starting soon. I'm getting down, looking for that long lost radio. I got a chair, got a rope, I found a tree, and now I tie it up, tie it up, tie it up, tie it up. Oh! They're getting crazy, baby. Things are getting nuts.
You got to see the video. That is, how do you decide you want to be a ska band?
I grew up with a father that played with a whole bunch of Jamaican reggae musicians and blues. And I was influenced by the reggae and the ska that I grew up with in this house in the country in Vanclykill, Ontario, where we had a studio. And it was very loose living over there, for the good way to put it. And so I grew up with that influence. But, of course, growing up in the age that we did, we were influenced by the Clash and punk rock in those days. And it just married perfectly together. And that's how it all came together, you know, and it just made sense. To us, it wasn't forced at all. It's just naturally. I mean, I wrote songs before I could play music, you know, and I kind of learned. Yeah,
I know it's not put on for you, because when I first met you, you were doing Trip the Off, and it was very more mid-tempo reggae-ish feel. Mm-hmm. You used to come in to Club Zone doing the whole Guns to Brixton.
That's right, yeah.
That we would do. And yeah. So, yeah, that's your blood.
Absolutely, yeah. Man. Absolutely.
K-Man and the 45s, I don't mind. This is a very special Melnick and Murphy podcast following the death of Brian Smith. And I want to thank Lauren. We can't thank you enough. Lauren Rubin of Paramount Financial Services.
Our main man.
Our main man. He got in here early because he had the vision. And, you know, people who got to take care of your money and make it grow, they have to have that vision thing. And Lauren has it. And he's just a great guy, big music fan, and very, very funny. If you want someone you can trust to take care of your money, Lauren Rubin, Paramount Financial Services, 514-905-0876, 514-905-0876, Lauren Rubin, Paramount Financial Services. We're going to have a couple other people who are going to be helping us out over the next little while. Shane Murphy, a week ago tonight, we were on stage at Club Soda. Is this a joke? No, it's a roast of Tony Marinaro with Derek Sagan as host and roast master, and you as band leader. And one of the things we wanted to do was have walk-up songs. Like in Major League Baseball, they come to the plate, they play their favorite song, a little bit of their favorite song. And Andy Bennett, originally she wanted a Madonna song. And then she said, you know what, just tell Shane to play some of that ska reggae stuff that he does, because I love it.
Funnily enough, I don't really do ska. As K-Man can attest to. Well, people always
There's so many. I get the reggae part.
Well, there's reggae's
play the reggae real fast.
Reggae's a big a big umbrella. But I mean, arguably people would say that there was ska before reggae, and that reggae came from ska. So in the mid-60s, one of the big ska hits that made it to international attention was My Boy Lollipop. So that was like one of the first hits in North America. And then a guy named Lynn Tate was from Trinidad.
We had him up at the jazz festival, right? A couple years ago, Lynn?
Yeah. And he's from Trinidad, and there's a bit of contention between Trinis and Jamaicans as to who released the first reggae single. And all that to say is the type of reggae that I play is more dancehall, which came around in the late 70s, early 80s, and then hit its heyday in the mid 80s and early 90s with like Shabaranks and stuff like that. So it's in the same family, but it's rhythmically different. But so that's what we did. So she was like, play some ska reggae, and I was like, I know what she means. She wants me to play some dancehall, but that's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
But that was a. I remember right after, it was a very long show, like Billy Bob Productions tends to do. And
keep it under 2 minutes.
And okay. I kind of threw in the towel about. When I realized we were 14 minutes in and we were like 12 minutes over, I realized that these roasters were not going to cooperate with the timesheet. Yeah. So I just rolled with it, and I just wanted to have fun. And
let it go.
Yeah, that's it. And deal with the overtime when I got the bill. And but Alec McElkren, who's been around forever, right, and plays everything, right? Mm-hmm. Is there an artist or a genre of music that Alec is not can't play?
I would say no. I've never seen him play salsa, but he probably could.
When the night ended, and maybe he put his bass down. He said that was fun, and different and kind of silly, and I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Well, you're playing 12 seconds. You know, I did that just for last.
Well,
right. That's right. I saw the video on Facebook. It was awesome with Gary White.
Derek was on that. On that gig as
right.
well.
Gary yeah. wasn't. It was Gary and you, Gary and Fred
yeah,
Gallo.
Gary White and Fred Gallo on guitar. Right. Yeah, we were the house band for the.
I think you did. It was on "Won't Get Fooled Again." You guys were doing something.
Well, that was every night we would switch it up, and every comedian we'd kind of ask them, "Hey, what do you want to?"
But it's so odd because like he got all of a sudden Mitch sends me. I get the text right because he sends the emails out. Okay, give us your walk up songs, and we're getting like Nelly Furtado.
Right. You got to go on YouTube really quick and learn the main riff.
Another One Bites the Dust. Yeah. Madonna, like it was all over the place. And then, so now I'm trying to put the band together, figuring out like.
Oh, we went Pantera to Brick House. Like it was all over the place, yeah.
Which you have to do, but it was weird when you get, you're like, okay, we have 2 minutes of the song. And we actually rehearsed here at CNS Studios.
All you need West Side.
You know? Yeah. So that's what we realized. And we're like, the first time you do it, it's like, well, it's the walk-up songs. Right. And then you're like. Then you realize people start walking off. So you're like the walk on and the walk off. So things were happening pretty quick for me on stage, but it was a great experience.
They did. There were a few who wanted to actually hear their walk up song, and that was cool. Dan Robertson,
yeah.
You know, he let you guys play in Panama, and he got into it.
So Dan Robertson, and I think Eddie Van Halen's an amazing guitar player, and one of the reasons I don't learn any Van Halen songs is because it's just
too intimidating.
It's too much for me, right? Yeah. So I look at the thing and I go, oh shit, oh. He wants Panama, and I, you know when something's too good, like you can't, like there's certain things that I can't listen to because it just,
what?
Yeah, I know your Van Halen t-shirt. I saw Eddie Van Halen when I was 18 for the Fuck Tour, and just watching it live, and I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to, and so I just never, I like my guitar players more sloppy. Anyway, so Panama.
Well, you
got to
see him
on,
in 2004
like,
then, because he was pretty drunk that tour.
And I was like, oof. Even Eddie Van Halen sloppy is a scary thing.
But yeah,
it was fun.
Even Eddie sloppy is beyond. Yeah.
So I'm tapping now.
And Cherry Bomb. You guys play Cherry Bomb. That was great to hear for Robin Flynn.
Yeah, it was fun.
She let you play out a little bit. And
Joan Jett and the other guitar player, Steve.
What?
Joan Jett and, come on, Lita Ford.
Yeah, all you need from the Runaways. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the Runaways.
What?
Good.
Movie. I don't know. You said Eddie Van Halen, Joan Jett.
I guess. I'm not a disher. I'm not a disher. That was a bad pass, Steve.
Bad pass.
What?
Right over my head. Right. To the stands.
And of course, Noel Butler. You guys got to play and with Alex singing "London Calling," which was cool. Mm. That was cool to hear at Club Soda. "London Calling."
Yep.
You know, that was anyway. It was a fun night. And we have a Christmas party coming up in late November. We're going to tell you about that in just a couple of minutes. But I wanted to get into the Capones. Because the Capones, I met Steve used to do the sound at Club Zone or Club One.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Scott.
Well, it was both. It was
Scott
Club
was
Zone.
Yeah, Scott was the initial sound man, and he didn't want to do every night. And so I got a crash course. I didn't know what I was doing at all. Luckily, the bands were just as bad as I was, so nobody could tell whose fault it was.
Except when Billy Bob Productions.
Yeah. Well, by then, I think I had learned a thing or two by the time you guys came in. But yeah, I remember the first band I did was like, it was pretty, it was brutal on both ends. Yeah.
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 So how long did it take you to figure that out? Have you guys ever done that? Have you ever worked sound?
No,
I have.
You really hired drunk, man.
But
well, it might happen two times, and it was probably like shittiest sounds ever. But yeah.
I had this guy.
It's stressful.
It's
a stressful feeling.
Louis, who runs Sound Module, he's kind of been my mentor since day one. And I'd have him on speed dial, like, dude, what's this button do? You know, why do these guys suck so bad? And sometimes he'd be like, it's the band sometimes. And a good band, like he said, will do sound for themselves. And like one time I remember I was doing sound in the early stages of your band. I think you were doing originals. I don't even think you were doing any covers at all. Mm-hmm. And you came in and I was just like, okay, well, the mic's on and it's good to go. I just saw. You guys were loud enough that in a small room, you don't have to really jack up the amps or anything like that. So the bass drum is, you just get some low end out of it, and your vocals are good, and boom, a good band will do their own sound, you know. And there's a saying in that means a lot more than when you dig into it, but it is what it is. Like, sometimes you got to really work magic to make, you know, shit shine.
A sound man can't fix a band.
No, we're not magicians. We're a sound exactly. man.
Yeah. Well, it only amplifies whatever it is you're giving on the stage. Yeah, so exactly. If it's bad, there's nothing.
We started doing a lot of the Billy Bob shows. A lot of them were the American singer-songwriters who had stopped coming to Montreal for whatever reason. They were musicians we liked. So it had nothing to do with business. It had everything to do with us wanting to see these musicians in our city.
And that was
we brought them here.
That was a great learning curve for me, too, like having Penny Lang and some of those others that I did sound for with you guys. And I didn't grow up on that music, but there's a very intricate detail to making it right. Like it's what was his name? Bonneville.
Ray Bonneville.
Ray Bonneville would come in, and I was just like floored by some, like these guys could own a stage. Chris Whitley was
The late Chris Whitley.
Yeah.
We had every blues musician.
We traveled to Ottawa with him and everything.
Oh, yeah?
We became friends. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
He's the only guy I ever scored drugs for. I don't even do drugs. So he's like, dude, where can I get weed in this city? I'm like, I like you, so I'll see what I can do. And so I'm running up and down the street.
I thought you meant drugs.
Eh?
The hell was that? Hey,
well,
back then it was still
pre-2018. This thing called weed was illegal.
Just teasing you.
He was in his undershirt, right?
Yeah,
constantly.
Always at the wife beater.
There was an album he put out called Weed with that picture of him, and he was so skinny, and you know he did a lot harder drugs than weed.
Oh, yeah,
but he was a brilliant musician, and every blues musician in town when we booked him in Club One, it was an overflow crowd.
Yeah.
80% of it were Montreal musicians there that night.
Yeah.
And so we did Chris Whitley, we did Fred Eaglesmith, we did Ray Bonneville, Eric Anderson, who was a folk legend, that used to hang out with Bob Dylan in the Village. We did a lot, Tom Russell, Jimmy LaFave was our guy,
somebody from Spirit of the West on a side project or something like that. I remember
Mac McKenzie would come in.
And I did sound for quite a few of them, and I had no idea that some of these people were Juno Award winners. I'm just like, well, what's this old guy want in his monitor, you know? Like, I'm really so oblivious to folk, and it opened my eyes to a whole new world, and it was a learning curve for me, and I really enjoyed it.
So I don't know why, but I think he charmed us, this dude here, and then we got to meet Scott. And then we got to meet Brian.
Yeah.
And that was like a whole, he added a whole, I mean, it was like.
Because Brian wasn't really in Club Zone as much as Scott and I. Scott was managing and sounding. And I was, I would manage sometimes on Mondays and Tuesdays and do sound, I think, Friday or Saturday, whatever. But so we pretty much.
Because you had mentioned.
At one point, I literally lived in the bar and I would sleep on stage for about a month between apartments. So that bar was my home.
So I started following these guys around the pubs, and I really liked them. And it wasn't – the music was one thing, and I really liked the music. I wouldn't have stayed. I don't care how much I liked you.
But it's strange that you ended up getting attached to us because we're, like, so
I know.
Far off.
No, but there's some elements of what you did to what I – you know, there's probably music that I like that you don't think I like, but I like.
Well,
you know
I mean? If you're from an era where there was everything, so.
Yeah.
I think they need to get a room.
It's getting intimate in here.
It's getting intimate.
Oh, well, I haven't seen Steve in a long time.
No,
well, you
I
got the Capones?
It's all love, right?
Is this the Capones?
Yeah, but that's what Mike Hand on drums. That's the guy who replaced Brian.
Okay. But is the sound good enough so people would understand who've never heard you? That or you don't? If you don't want this
on,
we
really
won't.
I'd never even heard that, so I don't even know. I don't look back.
Okay, because I try to bring in my Capone CDs, but I've moved and everything is in storage,
right.
And it would have taken a couple hours.
Yeah.
So how would you explain the sound of the Capones?
Well, what we had in our heads is not what ended up coming out of it. I think it came out a little more diluted and soft than we intended. Because Scott and I our idea was very Ramones-esque, you know, like very. But we also like melody and harmonies. We grew up a lot with bands that could sing. So I liked the marriage of the two. I've always loved Green Day and bands like that, even though they're a later generation of what we grew up on, because they kind of mixed it in a little bit. I grew up on Queen and I grew up on the Ramones. So to marry those two is great. But when you put too many harmonies and the guitar, the chords are like all like majors, it starts sounding a little nicer than it should. So yeah, there was a little less. The piss and vinegar was in the live show. Like we would smash
guitars.
Had,
yeah, and you, but you, all three of you had such personality.
Yeah, we were very animated. Yeah,
you had to see them live. So I don't know how often you guys got to see them live, but they,
we played together back then.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We did.
I
shows.
Remember that vaguely. It's all kind of smoky in my head, you know. But yeah, I do remember being there. Yeah.
So we booked Frank Marino to do a comeback show at the Spectrum, and another one of our friends, Rob Lutz from the Old Hood, he opened. And then Frank wanted to do a second show at Club Soda.
Rob Lutz opened for Frank Marino.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was not my call. Nothing personal, Rob. No, we liked him, and we pushed local musicians. That's what we do.
No, I'm not saying anything disparaging about either artist. No,
very judgmental. It's because on the
no,
on
don't
the,
put words in my mouth. No, you know.
Well, live
doesn't match.
Usually, no, it doesn't match.
It doesn't match. I get it, but
I think Frank and Rob would agree with me. That would be a weird pairing.
Yes, but Rob is very thrilled.
Well, of course, but still, he's like, okay, I'll do it.
Rob Lutz, if you wouldn't have reacted, I would have been disappointed. We got a Capone song you want to lead us into here?
Yeah, this is...
Alan found this?
So this is, there's a really funny... Actually, both these songs are... Well, Bottles and Cans is really a Capone's. The 45 was something Capone's ended up playing, but it's me on all the instruments on that song. So here's Bottles and Cans. This song is... It's funny. We wanted to kind of do this one-off shoot where we only did one show as a pseudonym, where we wanted to write something stupid and heavy and only rehearse it once. We had this jam once where we just kind of went off the cuff. We were kind of tired of doing the routine, going on tour, doing the routine, going on tour. So we said, let's make a band and call it something absurd. So we called it Christ Puncher. And we played one show at Club Zone under this name. And I remember throwing out my neck from head bashing the whole night.
Hi, we're sitting here with Steve from Christ
Steve
Puncher.
Creep from Christ
Steve
Puncher.
Creep.
Hi, Mom.
How are you feeling,
my boyfriend?
Steve? How many Jesus have you punched today?
So I wrote this song in like 5 minutes. I blatantly stole it from Tobacco Road, which David Lee Roth covers on Eat 'Em and Smile. And this ended up being one of the songs that seemed to always go over so well that we're like, well, we ended up using it in the Capones, and everybody liked it. So this is Bottles and Cans.
No friends, no honey, no life, no hope. I ain't
Come on, Shane Murphy. How does that sound?
Rock and roll, baby.
That is amazing. The Capones. What year is this?
I don't know. Well, that somebody posted that on 2008, but it's
yeah,
way
that's
before
definitely
that.
Yeah.
When because Brian, when, we I, when
that
I
was
joined
the late band, Brian Smith on drums and Steve Creep here and Scotty Mitchell.
Right, and Brian was with us from when I joined. Like I said, 97, and it was there was a thing that happened in 90. I guess 2003, 2004 was when it all ended with Brian. But I'm really happy that we got to stay friends over the years, you know, and. It's unfortunate, and it was never really the same, to be honest with you, after he wasn't in the band anymore. Well, we had a couple of good talks near the end about that, and I felt like it was the elephant in the room that we never really addressed. And so it was kind of cool to like sit down
I figured that. It was really nice to read on Facebook that you were spending time with him. And so I'm following these guys around from pub to pub, and then we have a chance to do a Frank Marino concert, and he wants to do a second one at Club Soda. And I don't know if this was before.
This was after the Bob Dylan.
So it was Bob Dylan's 60th party, and we had a. It was our first big event for Billy Bob Productions, and it was free. It was pay whatever you want, and everybody and anybody could come in all night and just play a couple of Bob Dylan songs. We didn't even know half the people who showed up that night, honestly. But the place was packed. It was probably Jerry O'Regan's best night at the place. You could still smoke back then in the pubs, and there was a lot of weed and a lot of well-known people. It was just a wild night, and because Frank had gotten to know us and he heard what we were doing, he heard about you guys.
Yeah,
and I said, "Would you show up late and play Watchtower, or Rolling Stone, or something?" And
because he was the only other rock and roller other than us really in the bar, and so I can't remember if it was premeditated, like if we got the we must have.
It was very last minute. You were going to play. You were going to play regardless because of me. I asked you, and you were going to play. You guys were going to play something.
Yeah.
And I said I'm going to try to get somebody pretty well known to play in front.
I don't remember how I even knew how to play those songs. Like he came in, or like, well, can we jam this, this, and this? And we played. I don't know, about 3 to 5 songs with Frank.
Yeah, a mini set.
And I don't remember sitting down learning them, but I
just remember you guys, especially Brian, back there, beaming. Yeah. You guys were fucking beaming.
Brian loves the stage, you know. That's his home, man.
And he's playing behind Frank, you know. Yeah. You know what that's like.
Pretty
Shane.
Fun gig, yeah.
I never played behind Frank.
No, but I mean, you played together.
We've never played together.
You've never played together. No. I thought because you visited him. Oh, you guys have never played guitar together?
Not on stage. I mean, we've you know, passed a guitar, you know, back and forth, which is quite unnerving in his basement with all the SGs lined up. I was with you remember I used to play with Avi. I used to play with Avi.
Yeah,
and Avi was his bass player and his violinist and his rhythm guitar player. And so he said, "Do you want to go see Frank?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we're gonna go see Frank." And I walked in the basement and he had like. There was like 9 SGs lined up, and I was like, holy shit, I'm in Frank Marino's birthday. Be cool, be cool. Inside voice, be cool, be cool. Hey, Frank, what's up? Hey, cool, right on, thanks. And shitting my pants.
So you guys opened for Frank at Club Soda, which is the real live album that's out there.
Is it? I didn't even know.
You hear my voice break as I introduce him. I said, why did
you
keep
had one
that
job?
Because it's called Real Life. I was so excited.
And our next guest is...
So you guys.
Yeah. And my roommate, who I used to live in NDG with, is Frank's guitar player, Mick Lane.
Sure.
At that show.
Still have his hair down to his ass?
No, I think he may have cut it. I haven't seen him in a long time, but hell of a guitar player. It's almost crazy how the two of them together, how much talent there is on one stage.
So after that night, my goal was to manage the Capones.
Good luck.
No, honest to God, I really liked all of you guys, but we were unmanageable. I wanted to manage the Capones, and my goal, I don't think you'll remember this, I said my goal is to get you guys on the Mike Bullard show.
I don't remember that.
Do you remember the Mike Bullard show?
Oh, I do remember the
Mike Bullard show. It was a late night, and he's a Canadian comedian, and they had live music acts, and I knew people, and I thought I could do it. And then I got hired to do morning radio.
That's what you were referring to in the message you sent.
Yeah, the Team 990 started, and that meant getting up at 4 in the morning every day. There was no chance of that happening.
Yeah.
But I wanted to. I really liked you guys that much.
I remember some talk somewhere about Mike Bullard, and I couldn't remember what the correlation was, but I guess, now that you bring that up, it makes sense.
So let's bring back the Capones. Man.
You mean like now?
Yeah. Let's have a
Well, the
shame.
Capones is Scott, Brian, and me.
Yeah. Right?
So we had Mike Hand, respectively, and Jerry Mercer's son, Sean, also very respectively. But like I said, it was just never really the same after. You know, like it's funny, you can take elements of some of your favorite bands and fill them with musicians who might bring something different and technically better in some ways to the table, but you're screwing with the recipe. And the way it ended with Brian, which I feel like I got to address, was there was a period there where he was engaged and it fell apart, and his mom died. I feel like it was in the same year, and his head started to. He was just really distracted, you know, understandably. But you know, we were young and kind of pigheaded, and it was affecting his performance on stage. And we came to the conclusion that maybe it's best that he stepped down. And it was a really tough day, like having to sit him down at jam. And I remember he was quite devastated. I don't know what he told people as to how it ended, but like that was one of our last conversations. Was like, dude, I have to tell you, like that never left me. You know?
Yeah.
That was hard.
Wow, that's.
Yeah, that was hard. And I went to his house, like it must have been a month ago, and he said, yeah, thanks, you know.
Wow.
He needed to hear that.
Yeah.
I don't think he even thought about it, but when I brought it up, he's like, he goes, thanks for bringing that up. That means a lot, it means a lot to you to say it, you know.
So, yeah.
A band is an intricate thing.
It is, like you're in a family and you're in a relationship that goes three, in your case, was it five ways, you know? So it gets harder and harder, so, right?
Yeah, but when I say let's bring back the Capones, I don't mean I mean get people aware, you know, trying to get people aware of what you sounded like and what you were and why people like me liked you guys.
Well, we had a certain notoriety around town, I guess, but I don't know. I look forward. I don't really look back too often.
Shane, does it make sense that I like that music?
Of course.
Like it's, what do you hear? What do you hear in there?
You like music with energy and emotion, and
yeah, you keep it light. We're there just to have fun. That's what we did, you know. But with this whole thing, we're talking about Brian wanted a life celebration party, you know, and I know that K-Man's probably gonna do a whole set, I would imagine, for something like that.
Honestly, I don't even know where we're at right now. Like I know that everybody. I'm not thinking for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give myself a couple of days to think. Everybody's kind of trying to digest right now, and it might take a bit of time. I don't want to say at all what I'm going to be doing in the next week or two. We will definitely be there for sure, and there are instruments around, and I know us as humans, so something is liable to happen.
Well, yeah, and it should be recognized, too, that Brian was with a very loyal girl who stood by his side and raised a lot of money for him and did everything right to the very end. Kim Parsons, who is just, you couldn't be luckier than Brian to have this girl around. So she wants to do, as per his request, do a life celebration. Now, this is going to happen at an undisclosed time at a... We don't know what venue, but the idea is to do something somewhere down the line.
We'll have it sorted out in a couple of days.
Eventually.
Alan is pointing at this very spot where we're sitting, which would be what, Shane? Where are we?
CMA Studios, West Side, NDG, baby.
Word.
have you played here, Shane?
Yeah, Jam. We have all the rehearsals here.
I know. No, I know that, but I mean, outside of rehearsing.
Yeah,
like I know Alan has some nights here where there's some live music. And
yes, I came to one of the fabled Friday night parties, but I was in no condition after about 20 minutes after my arrival. I was in no condition to play. And I'm not going to say how that happened.
I asked someone who was here, I said, how'd the night go? They said, great. They said, Shane showed up. I went, oh, so it must have been like between 2 and 4? And they went, yeah. And I said, what did he play? And they said he didn't. He just kind of stood there.
It doesn't cost very much, but it lasts a long while. What's that John Prine song?
Illegal smile.
That's right. Yeah. Not illegal for long.
Yeah.
Yeah, things get a little hairy. So there's once that happens, there's no guitaring.
We're gonna finish the way we started with an Elton John song, since, again, he's by the time you hear this, he will have left Montreal for the last time. Do you guys like Elton John?
Absolutely. Everything is is an influence to a sponge.
Just kidding. I like Elton John. I like Elton John. He's fine.
Make him an offer.
I wanted to go to the show tonight, but I got a message from you guys, and this is a little more important to me. So
yeah, good for you.
Yeah,
it's a great documentary on BBC on YouTube. I think it's BBC. Elton John's early life, coming up, being a piano prodigy. Very interesting.
Didn't he dress up as a duck or something on stage?
Yeah, that was at Dodger Stadium, I think, actually. He did
a
that.
A duck?
Yeah, he came out as a duck.
No, he sold out.
You know that Paul Simon, Farewell Tour, it's over, right?
Yeah.
He came out on Saturday Night Live, American Thanksgiving, in a turkey suit.
A duck and turkey.
Well, it's nice to know.
Take me seriously.
Damn.
Yeah, you can't sing all those heartfelt love songs.
Elton John, like with Bowie.
What, is it something I'm wearing?
Something I said?
Is there something in my teeth?
Parts of his life, like years of his life, that he doesn't remember because of partying. Like he was really...
He was in rehab.
I think he said he didn't remember 1970, 1975. And Bowie doesn't remember 75 days. Something along those lines. But he sold out Dodger Stadium 5 nights in a row. How many people in Dodger Stadium?
Yeah, it's 55,000.
Yeah.
5 nights
in
a row.
You're lucky if you can do one night, you know.
I saw him with Billy Joel, the second one that they did. I remember, and it was great. It was a great night. You just tend to forget, you know, because those aren't normally people I would go to see. But I want to see them, and it's like hit after hit after hit after hit.
They drew
hit
you
after
in,
after
man.
Hit
Did
after
I
hit
see you at the
after
Eagles?
Hit after hit after hit.
We at the Eagles 40th?
Like, I grew up with all of these songs, right? Some of them I didn't like, but I appreciate them more now.
That's
it's
why
just
I call them bucket list shows. Like, I feel there are certain legends where you may or may not have had their albums growing up. Like, I never owned an Elton John album, but I've always heard his songs. And it's like, when you go to see this live, you're like, God damn, it's like a lesson in history more than it is just songs at that point.
That's right.
Like, I went to see Paul McCartney, and it was just unbelievable. Like, you're getting schooled on history. 50 years of amazing music. And
One of Frank's favorite musician, I think.
Eagles, CCR, really? Tom Petty, I've seen them all. And it's I made a vow to myself. I worked with Skynyrd and a few others, and I was like, you know, after, especially Beach Boys, when you see them live, you're like, man, we're not going to have these guys around for much longer.
Right.
So I would grasp and seize every opportunity that you can get to see one of these shows.
What was Paul McCartney's band before Wings?
Wings, yeah.
I forget the other guys.
Okay. Yeah, 50th anniversary of the White Album is coming up. Man, oh, man. I want to hear another song from K-Man in the 45s, and we'll come back and say good night and thank you to Brian and toast Brian and all that. But what do you want to hear?
Well,
what do you want us to hear
about being on the road? Poppy's Back in Town was just the blitzkrieg of the road, and that song will say what's what.
Hey baby, have you heard the news? Oh, Poppy's back in town. It's a fly by night by the seat of my pants. So well, everybody, come on down. It's all backed up and we're feeling alright. Racing going town to town. And there's a hellfire burning and I'm heading out west. There's a feeling that's spreading around. You know the girls and the boys with electric toys and the venue busting out the scene. And there's a tension in the air, nobody seems to care, nothing is as it seems. And I said, hey baby, have you heard the news? Oh, Poppy's back in town. It's a fly-by-night by the seat of my pants. Well, now everybody, come on down. Through the air, we've been tied up too long, tired of the safe song. your turn and the cups are all wired. It's time to make our great escape. You know the band's warmed up and the merch is packed up and the hour is getting late. Yeah, I counted head one misses in the starlight. Girl, I won't let him go. And so we load her in the van, drive as fast as we can. Time to make another show. And I said, hey baby, have you heard the news? So I'll be back in town. It's a fly by now, by the seat of my pants. So will my everybody come on down. We'll be right back.
That is impressive tongue action right there.
I got a hat. Kristen,
K-Man and the 45s. Is this the last studio album?
Yeah, we're recording the new one right now as we speak, actually.
So is Brian going to be on the new one?
Yeah, actually, there's going to be like a quote at the end. Yeah. So, like, because unfortunately, with time, sometimes timing doesn't happen like very good. So, we just started recording, and unfortunately, now he's not
still
there
be in
anymore.
The credits, but just not.
But we'll quote like there's a cheers that we used to do with Johnny from Edmonton, like
from the Ray Gun Cowboys.
Yeah. So we're going on tour, and he's doing the cheers, and here's to the big chip, the little ship. And the ship we build in jars, but most importantly, our Fred chips, especially ours. So that will be like at
cheers,
the
brother.
End, like cheering for Brian because it's. I sure. Think
when is this? When are you looking to release that?
May.
Okay. Yeah.
So I would imagine it might be timed with whatever.
Yeah, it's going to be, I know, like, basically we knew this was coming on, so I just thought we better keep ourselves busy because I don't know how we're feeling. So we. Book the studio right away, and we're leaving in 2 weeks to go on tour in Europe. Then we'll come home. I'll go chill out in Jamaica for a couple of weeks. Then we'll release this, the new bitch, and get back on the road, do Canada, States, Europe again, then Canada again, and go.
Who did you grow up listening to?
I grew up with everything. I mean, mostly live. Like, I grew up with a whole bunch of Jamaicans around me, and my dad playing blues. So I grew up with the music that was in my house, and then I remember we had a vinyl record player, and there were some punk albums there, including like Bad Brains. I remember we had that. We had a bunch of Clash albums, stuff like that, Sex Pistols, and obviously the Ramones as well. And I just grew up with all that around me and did what I had to do, you know?
So Bad Brains, are they still active? Do you know?
Well, active is...
HR
they have highs and lows, you know?
HR has some issues right now, I think.
Exactly, yeah. But
Henry Rollins
is
a big fan of Bad Brains.
Absolutely.
Do you ever see him speak, Henry Rollins?
Yeah, I did at the National, I think.
Yeah, I was there that night.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, the guy speaks for like almost 3 hours without taking a break, not even a glass of water.
Yeah, and you look at the watch, like, what, we're done? It's been 3 hours? Like, what? You know? It's mesmerizing.
So, okay, and how about you, Josh? Who'd you grow up, who are your favorite musicians?
Since I'm a little younger, I was more into like the punk, but ska punk, like Street Light, Cash Wing 2, maybe Leftover Crack. I know it's maybe not, it sounds like it was very like a specific like punk rock ska. And like, I mean, I play trombone, so like when I used to be in high school, it was like all jazz and classic, so I wanted to go more edgy. Like still on the trombone, so it was more like Street Light, Leftover Crack, Real Big Fish, Big Dean, the Kids Table. It's kind of more my thing, I guess.
Yeah, and Steve, how about you?
I it's funny. I didn't grow up with albums. I had no radio in the house. I had, you know, I watched TV, and so in the 80s, you know, videos would come on, and I get the Dave Grohl thing a lot because I play a few instruments, so everyone just assumes that's where I got that from, but. Believe it or not, it was actually Prince was my first big one. I had all his albums up until about Sign of the Times.
I saw Purple Rain in the movie theaters. I was 12 years old.
No,
I come from Vancouver. You know, I had my friends. I'm like, oh, what are we going to do for your birthday? So I, you know, pleaded my parents to bring us to see Purple Rain.
That's the first album I ever bought.
My high school friends, or actually we were in elementary school then, they're just like, what the hell is this? You know, and I was like so into it. Apollonia.
Yeah.
Name Shane Murphy's top three guitarists.
I can't. I wouldn't even know.
Jimi Hendrix.
I could see
Prince.
Really, yeah.
And Justin Townes Earl.
You ever see Steve Earle's kid play guitar?
Nope.
Freak.
Really, yeah.
Acoustic guitar. I saw him open for Dan Auerbach at the, I think it was at the National, and stood there by himself, just like finger picking, and I was.
I think we finished the last podcast with that, right?
Yeah. Freak.
All right, so we're coming to the end. I want to go out with, by the way, it was great meeting you. Both
Absolutely.
You guys came in.
Thank
Josh
you.
Came in on the 45s. That's just, you sound like my youth, pretty much. And
thank
Steve
you for having us.
Creeps from the Capones. Geez, I wish if I can go back in time. You know, I don't like to do that.
But
yeah, you're like me. But I'm almost.
It was a good time. You know, that listening to that song again is just.
Well, just going to see Brian again opened up the doors to things. Like I'm every day is a new day for me. So I'm just always looking ahead, and I never take the time to think about where I came from. So it's this whole thing with Brian's made me look back at the old photos. I sent him like a batch. Every photo that I ever had with Brian in it, I sent it to him a couple of weeks ago, and he was. Yeah. He's like, you can't believe you even still have that. But I keep stuff around, and I just never look at it. You know, I'm just like that. I buy guitars. I play them for three shows. I buy another guitar, and I leave that one in the closet.
Steve so. Has the nicest have? Guitars. It's crazy. I see your Facebook
post. I just got to learn how to play
like,
them.
Jeez, man. It makes my cock hard.
Shane, do you give guitar lessons? Somebody asked me that.
Do I get? No.
Yeah. Somebody wanted to know if you could teach them how to play the guitar. You don't do that. Okay. All right. So we got a couple of Billy Bob productions coming up in November.
November 10th, Andrea Romolo.
Andrea Romolo singing Leonard Cohen songs.
Yeah.
The new album is Homage, and she's singing them at Casa di Popolo, which is just a few blocks from where Leonard lived, where she used to stay.
Casa di Popolo.
Yes, that's on November 10th. It's a very limited, it's a small room, very limited tickets available. But you can go to the website. And then on we're having Billy Bob Productions throwing a Christmas party. On November 30th at Fairmount Theater, Tommy Youngstein.
Bilal Butt
opening up with a full band. And
Santa
Tommy
Claus
Youngstein.
Might be there.
Who's that?
Santa Claus might come.
Santa Claus will probably be there. It's a Christmas party. We want you to join us. Tommy Youngstein performing the best,
they let him
the
go to
very
jail.
Best of Bruce Springsteen and a special Motown tribute. And again, if you don't know Tommy Youngstein, it's Alan Snoddy used to play guitar in the Stars and a lot of different musicians from different bands who can all really, really play. And Tom Petty, Neil Young, and Bruce Springsteen are their favorite musicians. So in between gigs, they go out together and they do a great job.
They're doing
really
a Prince homage.
What's that?
They're doing a Prince.
Are they really?
No,
they
move. I'm just kidding.
Oh, you got them both
Neil
in there.
Neil Young, Bruce
Prince
Springsteen,
and
Tom
homage.
Petty. All Prince.
Right. I've actually gigged with Alan Snoddy.
Oh, yeah?
I've gigged with almost everybody.
So who haven't you played with?
Shane.
That's
well,
crazy.
We're always gigging the same nights.
Yeah.
We could be gigging the same night.
Why don't all you guys?
I could be your drummer.
Something one night. So final thoughts. Once again, let's start with you, Josh, on Brian Smith.
All right.
Final thoughts on Brian.
Well, it was pretty impressive. Let's say, you know, there's three truths in life. The sun's going to rise, the sun's going to go out, and Brian's know everybody in the bar more than you. I know that if I'm going to a bar with Brian, I'm going to have an awesome night. Like, the way he makes feels everybody, so warm, so, it's intense. Like he have a will to make you live and make him live while you're living a moment, and it's pretty impressive. So, I'm thanking him for everything that he have done, and he's gonna do again because, he's still there.
That's beautifully said. Mm-hmm. Shane, you want to add something?
Brian, for me, whether I could see him, three times in a week, or I could not see him for 6 months, and it was always the same, and he was just a super cool dude who loved music and was one of the mainstays and pillars of the Montreal music scene and what it meant to be a musician. And as we were talking when we were listening to some of K-Man's songs, to be a music fan, and I think we're all music fans. That's why we're here. We love it and what it does for us, to us. And, I'm just sad. But just remember the good times, Remember the good memories and the music he made. And that's it.
Yeah. Nice to see some pictures in here of that cowboy hat you guys were talking about earlier. K-Man.
A couple of days ago when I was with Brian, I was telling him that I've been receiving so many messages through our band page and stuff. I mean, I couldn't answer everybody. And I said, look, is there anything you'd like to tell everybody? And he told me, yes, tell everybody to be nice to one another. And I posted that. And what I'm trying to say is that Brian made everybody else better. whether you're a musician playing with him or you're down and you need advice, but he made you a better person. And Brian, I love you.
Thanks to Lauren Rubin, once again, of Paramount Financial Services, 514-905-0876. Stay tuned for a memorial at some point for Brian Smith from K-Man and the 45s, and of course the Capones with Scotty Mitchell and this dude right here, Steve Creep.
Cheers, man. Nothing to add to that. You okay. Got it. You own this job. It's going to be a party, though. He didn't want a wake. He didn't want a funeral. He wants a life celebration.
And he made that crystal clear.
And we're going to deliver it. We're going to give him something to be happy about.
Thanks again to Alan Hodgson of CNS Studios for the hospital.
West Side.
I'm not a present for your friends to open. This boy's too young to be.
Inside.